Hello, I'm Bruce Edwards, and welcome to this podcast produced by the International Monetary Fund. In this program, how robots may be the answer to Japan's shrinking labor force.
They are facing this constraint in terms of labor supply. And in that sense, it's sort of like the mother of invention. They have no choice but to move in this direction unless they want to rapidly increase immigration.
Currently in Japan, deaths outnumber births by about 1,000 people a day. The population in some regions is now smaller than it was in the 1950s. The combination of its rapidly declining labor force, expected to fall even faster than the overall population, and the limited influx of immigrants creates a powerful incentive for robots and artificial intelligence, or AI. Todd Schneider and Ji-hee Hong are economists in the Japan team at the IMF and co-authored Land of the Rising Robots, an article featured in the June 2018 edition of Finance and Development magazine.
So what is the history of robots in Japan and how have they fit into its economy?
No, that's a great question. I mean, Japan has a very long history with robots and automation. It's really one of the pioneer countries in this field. Kawasaki Robotics, was producing robots starting about 40 years ago. And today, if you're thinking about Japan and robots, you know, you're going to think of Denso and Fanuc and Panasonic, Toyota, Sony, lots of different firms. And this is one of the reasons why they're really still one of the world's leading producers, if not the world's leading producers of robots worldwide, especially in industry. But it's also been one of the pioneers, I think, in integrating robots, robotics and automation into the workplace. And that's primarily up till now been in industrial settings. But, you know, back in 1995, there were about 700,000 robots being used worldwide in industrial settings, and about 500,000 of those were in Japan. And that's, you know, that's a good snapshot to where things were 20 years ago. Now it's diversified more. Robotics and automation is really a more global phenomenon. But you can still see Japan in the front runners in terms of what we call robotic density, which is another way of looking at it. It's how many robots do you have per 100 workers, say. And it's a way of assessing how deeply integrated robots and automation are into the economy. Japan is currently number four. They're behind Singapore, Korea, and Germany. But they were number one up until about 2009. Mm. But they're still among, as I say, among the front runners. And you can really clearly see it visibly. And it's been fascinating for myself because I worked on Japan more than 15 years ago and living in Tokyo. And now coming back to Japan after that long period, I can really see much more integration, not just of robots per se, but of artificial intelligence, automation, screens, digitization across many different sectors in the economy. And in many respects, they're taking the place of people.
Yeah. So I was going to ask you about that. In fact, one of the maybe Ji-hee, if you might want to talk about this, one of the reasons why robots, I think, have taken on such a prominence. Part of it is because of the demographics. So there is a shrinking or at least aging population and a shrinking labor force, mm-hmm. perhaps. How do you see, or do you think it's reasonable to think that robots can actually fill that void?
Mm-hmm. As Todd was mentioning, Japan has been the front runner. It has always been at the technological frontier in terms of robot production and also cultural affinity. If you think of all the mangas that we used to watch when we were kids, there is a definitely kind of embracing of robots or artificial intelligence much more than other countries. Coming to the potential role of robots or artificial intelligence or automation to fill this void of demographics, definitely that's something that could be promising with the Japan's technology, advanced technology, and it's pushing to advance even further for this very purpose, and the government is embracing this idea. This is gaining more weight as there has been a limited influx of foreign workers to fill the void.
So limited immigration.
Immigration or migration workers, much less than what you would see in other European countries with similar situations. So in this way, it has the advantage where robots can or automation could actually be helpful in this way.
So Todd, do you think that robots can actually fill this labor gap that they're experiencing in Japan?
No, not entirely. And that's where it's interesting to kind of delve into the data and look at the problem. Robots can't replace people, per se. They can't even replace people in occupations. What they can do is they can do some of the tasks associated with those occupations. So they can help augment, I think, the human labor that's available by taking on those tasks that are either not needed to be done by humans or not wanted to be done by humans. But they can't entirely fill that gap. If they could, you probably wouldn't see the kind of pressures that we're seeing in the labor market that we are. Unemployment really now is at record lows. Job-to-offer ratios are really quite high. And Japanese industries, instead of raising wages, sometimes they're actually cutting services, given the constraint that they have on the labor side. So automation is promising, and certainly it is filling part of that gap, but it can't fill, I think, the entire gap. And I think it's easy for us as economists to kind of extrapolate things into straight lines and see, yes, I could feel that. But that's part of the fun, I think, of working on this topic and going to Japan and meeting with professionals in the robotics industry that remind us of the technological hurdles that they have to cross and also some of the legal hurdles. You know, moving robots out of the industrial setting and into the human population has a whole set of issues that you have to deal with if you're going to have humans working side by side or just coexisting side by side with robots in things like services.
But do you think that the Japanese are more comfortable with sharing the workplace with robots? And why do you think that is?
Yes, definitely. I don't have a silver bullet answer as to why, but the Japanese have long had an affinity for robots. As Jihi was saying, it shows up in mainstream media, anime, manga, what have you. Maybe because they've been doing it for much longer than we have, but I'm not exactly sure why. I would say, look, I think we're all getting very comfortable with Alexa recently, so I think we're on that path. But yeah, I think there's a far more acceptance of automation and robotics in Japan and maybe less fear than there is in the U.S. and Western countries.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you think, Jihi?
Yes, I completely agree. We actually had a visit to Tokyo back in February, and it's not something that is so much in the future. There are already robots that are taking some of the jobs. We saw robots in subways providing directions in different languages. We see robots at airport providing directions once again in the airport, at the restaurants, and there are actually a hotel that's entirely run by artificial intelligence in Tokyo. So
from the front desk to the kitchen.
And cleaning too. And there are many applications already. It's surprisingly that we don't see in other countries. So it's kind of futuristic in this way.
Wow.
And farming as well. There's actually outside of Kyoto, there's a farm that's run almost entirely by robots.
So there is a certain level, a skill level that's required to actually leverage the potential that robots have. Do you think Japanese youth are more prepared to work with artificial intelligence?
You've hit upon a very important point, which is that the education track and what's included in education is critically important to be in a position later on to leverage robotics in the workplace. And it is a key concern because, you know, what the data show us and what studies show us, and this is fairly intuitive, is that those with a higher level of education and those with a higher level of the most appropriate education are much better able to leverage the robotic revolution than those who are not. And that has very important implications for inequality and income. So it really is a concern. And I think it's a concern that a lot of countries are dealing with. What exactly is going to be the set of skills necessary in order to make this most productive? Because robots and automation will, yes, they'll assume tasks. They will also create jobs at the same time, the way every kind of revolution in technology has, whether it's the steam engine or the typewriter or automatic teller machines, you know, that has taken the place of a human in some instance, but it's also created other jobs. You know, there's a new job I saw open just the other day. It's called Robot Wrangler. in a warehouse factory outside of Tokyo, and that's not an occupation that existed a few years ago. But you can see how this is going to change the nature of work for many, and people are going to need the skills, and we need to make sure that those skills are available more broadly, so that you know we don't want the kind of transition that comes with this sort of revolution to be a painful one.
Hmm. There has been a lot of talk about what's been called the productivity paradox, where the advancements in technology don't necessarily translate into more productivity. Is this different in Japan?
Well, I think that's one very telling statistic to look at. If you look at productivity per worker in manufacturing in Japan, and then you compare that with productivity in the services industry. In manufacturing and industry, you have heavy use of robotics. In services, you don't. It's very human capital intensive. Productivity in manufacturing is substantially higher, more than twice as high as it is in services. So, you know, that's sort of prima facie evidence that, yes, in the right setting, automation, robotics, and AI can actually play a very big role in increasing productivity.
How will they be able to, with this shrinking labor force, how will they be able to maintain that level of productivity?
Well, I think in the manufacturing sector, it's easy. There's always more room for automation, and that continues even today. If you look at what's going on at Toyota or other major car manufacturers, they continue to use advancements in technology to increase productivity. In services, or at least in non-manufacturing, in an office setting, for example, I think it's closely linked up with, one, changing the work style. And there is an ongoing effort towards work style reform in Japan, where you're putting a cap on overtime and you're encouraging people to work more effectively, more flexibly. But also, you know, look, the technology that's available could vastly improve the efficiency of a lot of the processes in Japan. And you can see that in finance. You can see that really in a number of other things. Construction, for example, is really interesting. They're using, because there's a labor squeeze in that area, they're using robots, drones, things like that to do surveying work. And you basically, you are augmenting human capacity through technology. So one person ends up being able to do the work of three people because you're able to manipulate the technology to feed the information to the human who makes the decisions and is behind the creative process.
And this is important in Japan because of a aging population and a shrinking labor force.
Yes, there simply aren't enough people to fill those positions.
That was
Todd Schneider
and
Chi-Hee Hong,
both economists in the IMF's Asia and Pacific Department and co-authors of Land of the Rising Robots, an article featured in the June 2018 edition of Finance and Development magazine. You can find the magazine at imf.org/FND or download the Finance and Development app to read it on your mobile device. And if you like this podcast, subscribe on iTunes or on your favorite podcast app. Just search for IMF Podcasts. You can also follow us on Twitter at IMF_podcast.